It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money. And so we're recording this early in the morning. And our guest is, I think, hungover a tiny bit. Is that true, Stephanie O'Connell?
No, I had a happy hour. So my last drink was at like 6 p.m., which for me is a little bit late.
Okay.
But not hangover inducing.
Let me just say that Stephanie O'Connell is a millennial money maven. Triple three. 3M. I love it. She is the author of the book, The Broke and Beautiful Life. And she is dedicated to helping young adults achieve financial greatness. So, welcome. This is fun.
Yeah.
What did you drink last night? What's your drink of choice?
Typically, keeping it simple, wine. But last night I got a little fancy. There's a new cocktail bar in my neighborhood,
yeah.
So I had a mojito.
Oh, an interesting choice for the
for the middle of January.
Exactly. For the winter time. All right. Now this is what's going on right now in the studio. We interviewed somebody previously who sent us this a dozen Rice Krispie treats.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that we put it out to serve it as if like, oh, you should have one at 9 o'clock in the morning. But that said, it's really a nudge to send us something really fun. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to do anything. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. 855-411-JILL. Our email is askjill@jillonmoney.com. One of the reasons that we asked you to come on here is that we often get questions from our listeners about how to deal with their millennial kids. Now, we also get questions from millennials themselves because I had this weird millennial following because I used to work at CBS Interactive and I did a lot of work at CNET. And so a lot of people know me from there. And I guess I want to start by first figuring out why you got into this. Like, you're a graduate of New York University.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so talk a little bit about where'd you grow up? What's going on with you?
Yeah. So I have a bit of a bizarre journey into how I got into money. And that is I went to college to study drama.
Hmm.
And I did. And I actually worked in theater professionally.
Hold on. Time out. Straight theater or musicals?
Musical theater. Are you a fan?
Stop. Okay. Everybody who's listening now is rolling their eyes because we'll never get to the financial stuff. This is so exciting to me. This is perhaps much more interesting to me, not to anyone else,
sure,
that you've done that. So musical theater.
Yes.
So if you look at, you know, the canon of Stephanie's work, are you kind of like a Rodgers and Hammerstein kind of woman, or are you more of like a Sondheim kind of woman, or are you more into the modern musical? Are you saying, you know, Rent or Hamilton kind of woman? Like, where do you put yourself?
I love the classics. Like, I love a good Rodgers and Hart, even. You know, that's pre-Rodgers and Hammerstein,
yeah,
for those who are familiar. Yeah, give me a good standard any day. That said, in terms of what I feel my vocal styling best suits is more the Liz Callaway, Lea Salonga, straight tone modern, but not too modern, like Les Mis-ish modern, but not, you know, Hamilton modern.
Okay. So you're not going to rap for us a money message to millennials.
I am afraid that would not be a good listen for anyone.
Okay. Now, you've seen Hamilton.
Unfortunately, I haven't.
You know, because you don't have enough money because you're a millennial.
This
unfortunately
is true. I have the money. I choose to spend it in some other ways at the moment.
Does it just kill you to see an $800-$900 ticket for a Broadway show? It does me.
It does.
That's silly.
It does. And my boyfriend works backstage on Broadway, so when I do go to shows, it's typically free. So it's hard to justify.
Mark, you got this already? Like, okay, wait a second. Where is he working right now? Backstage at what show?
So he just closed Something Rotten on Broadway.
Oh,
yeah.
That was supposed to be fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. If you love musicals,
yeah,
it's a parody on musicals themselves.
Yeah, so, my sister-in-law, who is a huge musical fan, she loved it. She absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's a blast. And then next is War Paint with Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole.
Okay, just to say... My God, that's a great cast. All right, I'm in there. You don't have to send crispy
treats. Just tickets.
All right, so you go in to study theater.
Yes.
Are you a Sondheim fan, though? Because I'm a huge Sondheim fan.
Of course I'm a Sondheim fan.
What's your favorite Sondheim show?
Into the Woods.
Really?
It's just hit after hit after hit.
It's rough, though. It's like, it's depressing, but he is depressing.
Yeah, all the shows are.
Wait a second. What about, interesting, so you would not put Sweeney Todd in there? As your top.
Oh, I love Sweeney Todd, but talk about depressing, excuse me.
Well, it's a little murder. It's a little murder in their pies, you know, bodies in the pies. Mm-hmm. My favorite, I do love that, but I love Company and I love Sunday in the Park with George.
Company is a good one, too.
Yeah, it is good. All right, let's get on to what people care about. All right, so you, Mark, I'm sorry, I cannot log on because I have no internet connection. All right, you go to NYU to study theater.
Yes.
What happens there?
So... I double majored in psychology for good measure.
Mm-hmm.
And
two useless degrees, thank God.
Exactly.
Right? Your parents must be thrilled.
Both of which have circuitously been useful 10 years later.
Okay.
But at the time, it was awful. It was just like I graduated college in 2008, no less, right, with a degree in theater. And so it was just the worst set of circumstances. Now, before... fall, I actually got an amazing job offer to go on the international tour of the musical Cinderella in Asia, understudying Lea Salonga. And so for a minute, I was living the dream, very careless, free. I didn't make a lot of money. My salary was $450 a week.
How'd that go?
Well, the good news is I had zero expenses and I got a per diem. So I literally never touched my salary. And the tour was 7 months. It was supposed to be open-ended, but financial crash.
Yeah.
And so December rolls around. The producers fly out. We're in Thailand. And they say, oh, we're going to send you home next month. Tour's over.
Oof.
Economy meltdown. We can't do this. So I go home. It's January 2009. I'm an unemployed actress living in New York City. And then the reality just kind of crashes down on me.
Did you grow up in New York?
I grew up in the suburbs in Connecticut.
The Connecticut
the
suburbs.
The Connecticut suburbs.
Fairfield County-ish?
Fairfield, Stamford, Connecticut.
Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. I grew up in Westchester County.
Oh, no way. Mm-hmm. We're neighbors. You know, I actually had a summer job at Rye Playland.
Okay, I love Rye Playland. I mean, who doesn't love the dragon coaster
That's
there? Does it still exist when you were there?
It did, and this was like 2005. Mm. I was one of the singers in their shows.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Monster Mouse, dragon coaster. This is, for anyone who's listening, like a suburban... park that is like it's an amusement park, but that's actually like giving it more than it needs to get, right?
Yeah, although they've changed the model since I worked there. I think it used to be a free park and then you had to pay for the rides,
right?
And now I think you have to pay just to get in, so it's not as accessible as it used to be.
Okay, now we're talking to Stephanie O'Connell, and when we get back from this break, we're going to actually find out how she went from being starving theater queen to Millennial Money Maven. You're listening to Jill on Money. Our number here is 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money, and we are delighted to have Stephanie O'Connell. She is a millennial money expert. I've been calling her the Millennial Money Maven, which I don't know if you like or not, but I think it's kind of cute, right?
I like alliteration a lot. You can see my book is The Broke and Beautiful Life, right? Millennial Money Maven. It all works for me.
Okay. So before we went to the break, we found out that Stephanie grew up in the burbs outside of New York. She went to NYU to study theater. You actually were a working actress, which is amazing. Because many people don't even get to that point.
Miracle of miracles.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you graduated, gosh, in like the worst possible year, 2008, the recession. And then you go on tour, tour gets cut short, you come back to New York. Now what?
Unemployment. And
which is, by the way, the most depressing thing to go like sign up for unemployment,
isn't
it?
It's terrible. And then you have to go to the Department of Labor and go to these workshops where they tell you how to get a job. And meanwhile, I'm an actress. So this is time I'm not using in any useful way, time I'm not at an audition, et cetera. So, yeah, it was just really depressing to realize the reality of how little the 7 months worth of savings that I never touched my salary bought me in New York City. And it was this reality check of, oh my gosh, cost of living, forget saving, forget investing, forget anything financially savvy for the long term, short-term needs, and I think this is true of a lot of millennials, just became so dominant in my psyche that I couldn't think beyond today, tomorrow, next month.
Now, do you feel like, I mean, you went to a very fancy college.
Yeah.
You probably grew up, you went to probably a good high school. Were your parents at all in the theater, or they do something different?
No. So my mom is like the American dream. She was born here, but her family had just come over from Ukraine. They were immigrants. Her father died soon after they had immigrated, and her mother didn't speak any English, and she had two daughters, and they lived in poverty in the East Village. And then they both worked and studied really hard, got full scholarships to Barnard, and then my mom went on to Columbia Business School and did the American dream. And I think for her, it was like, she wanted to play piano. She was artistic, and she always had that in her. But she was so business-minded, coming from this background of having nothing. And she was always really vigilant about pushing us to explore those things that she couldn't explore. And that was a real luxury in a lot of ways. But when it comes time to be an adult and you have to take care of yourself, that luxury kind of backfires because all of a sudden you went out and pursued your passion, but you still got to pay your bills.
It's so very interesting to me. I've had this conversation with other first generation people who say, and it usually goes one of two directions, right? So it's one direction is like, oh my God, I had to kill myself. Or, you know, I grew up, my friend Rena, she's so funny because she's a Holocaust survivor as a child, right? And then comes to New York through Israel, blah, blah, gets here, lives on the Lower East Side, in a dump. I mean, like when it was a tenement, horrible.
Yes.
And then, you know, she marries, and now her daughter is like paying a ridiculous amount of rent to live in the East Village, close to where the place is. She's like, oh my God, my mother and I killed ourselves to like get out of this area, and now you're going back in. But I noticed that the many immigrants will say, I want you to never feel what I felt. I never want you to struggle like that. And they're very hard on their kids, money-wise. And the other reaction is like an incredibly generous one, which is like, oh my God, I struggled. I never want you to have to do that. And they almost indulge.
Right. But I guess if there's indulgence to a point, and then you become an adult, and then you're on your own, which you should be, that inevitably backfires because you have been able to do what you love and you've had that luxury. And all of a sudden, you now don't have the foundational skills to pursue self-actualization. You know, you can't support your housing, your food. If you don't build that initial step of the hierarchy of needs for yourself, how do you graduate to the top? As opposed to if you've always come at the pyramid from the top, you have no basis for building up to that if you've always approached it top down.
It's almost like if you're running a company, you've got to do you have to understand all the bottom parts of that company and build all of your foundations. I totally agree with you. So, all right, wait a second. Let's get back to you for a second. So here you are struggling in New York.
Yeah.
So what happens?
So what happens is I become an expert at living in New York City on zero.
Really?
Really. Like, to the point that I would sublet my apartment and go couch surfing or stay with people, because to me, I didn't really understand how credit cards work at the time. And that actually wound up being a luxury. No, not a luxury, just a blessing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand the concept of spending money you don't have. And so what I did was find ways not to spend money.
You were essentially doing Airbnb before Airbnb existed.
I was, except I only did it long term, right?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so actors actually do this all the time because you always go out of town on gigs. So you sublet your apartment for a month, 2 months. And basically that's what I did to reduce my greatest cost, housing.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I found ways of hacking literally every cost.
Like, wait a second. Let's do a little, give me like your top three favorite things that you just never have to pay for in New York.
Well, basically, if you use New York Public Library, you can never have to pay for anything.
Like, what?
They teach yoga classes. They teach classes on how to use Excel. They have entertainment and speakers. They cover the gamut of absolutely everything. Also, the Parks and Rec Department has unbelievable programming, not just entertainment, but necessities like bike helmets and things like that.
What's so cool about that is, you know, obviously we're all over the country, but every you know, public library has amazing resources.
Yes.
I donated money to the New York Public Library right before the end of the year. And it does make me feel good. And also for all you dopes who are paying for office space in like these shared office space settings, libraries have actually become an incredibly effective way to like kind of do your work, get out of your house, do your thing, right?
Library is one of the most robust resources. And this is, like you're saying, it's nationally. It's not just here in New York City. Parks and Rec, town hall websites, and library websites are all gold mines for resources of all kinds.
You know what else I just say just about New York, in case anyone's coming to visit? Just walk.
Absolutely.
Like, if you're taking cabs all over New York, you are going to get killed.
That wouldn't even enter my psyche, taking a cab. In fact, I had a lunch date yesterday in Midtown, and I live up in Harlem now, and I just ran. I ran to lunch. I do that a lot. Like, I'll combine my workouts with my errands so I don't have to pay for the train.
No, except that, wait a second. Do you show up to lunch smelly and sweaty?
Well, this wasn't a business lunch.
Okay.
This was a friend lunch. And it was 4 miles, and then I gave myself about 10 minutes to walk and cool down after.
Mark, the best producer in the world, is a big fan of City Bike. So
I love City
Bike. He's all over that. That's
except
his favorite
it's
thing.
Not in Harlem yet.
Oh.
Yeah, it only goes up to 1/10. So
oh, interesting.
I'm looking forward to it, though.
All right, so you become this really, you just get totally psyched about figuring out how to live a simple life. And you know, like, it's funny because you say the book is called The Broken Beautiful Life, and we're talking to author Stephanie O'Connell, the millennial money maven. But what I would be really interested in finding out is, when we come back from the break, you talk to old people like me, but you also talk to your own generation. And I want to understand, what is it that we as the older generation need to know about talking about money with your generation? Mm-hmm. I think this is really helpful for people in the workplace. We had a guest who was like a workplace specialist who literally gets hired by these massive companies to help these three generations talk to one another. And so I think that what we need to understand is what we could be doing better as a older generation. I won't say which one. I'm like sort of on the cusp. So when we come back, Stephanie O'Connell is going to tell us how we can talk to millennials about money so it breaks through all the clutter, and what other resources and what other tips you have for the old folks and the millennials, too. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Tweet a question, @JillOnMoney. Don't forget, you can follow Mark at mtalercio, at M-T-A-L-E-R-C-I-O, and check out our new exciting podcast called Better Off. And we are here with Stephanie O'Connell, who is also a social media queen. What is your Twitter handle, madam?
I'm at Stephanie O'Connell. Stephanie with an F. O'Connell is double N. On Twitter, I can't fit in the second L.
But
yeah, I know. It sucks.
So it's N-N-E-L, though it's N-N-E-L-L.
All my other channels are double L, like Instagram.
Okay. Stephanie is a millennial money maven. She's the author of The Broke and Beautiful Life. Don't worry. We're going to link to this for you old people. Don't worry. I just, by the way, parenthetically had to explain, show my mother, take her phone and show her how to like actually subscribe to a podcast. It was one of the funniest exchanges. I'm sure that the entire staff at Cafe Luxembourg here in New York is like, you know, they were all gathering around saying like, how do you do that? Anyway, Stephanie, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about how you sort of got into this really interesting space where you yourself were kind of getting started in New York, somewhat broke. All right, totally broke. Managing your financial life and then kind of found these ways to save money and speak to your own generation about this. And so I think that what is interesting to me is that you've broken through.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that you broke through in a way that others have not?
I think the biggest problem with the financial dialogue is the approach is about, you should budget, you should invest, you should pay off your debt. Nothing about that is exciting. Nothing about that is approachable. Nothing about that is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
What is exciting and approachable and sexy is what those things afford you. It's not about the money. It's about the lifestyle that money supports. And you have to frame the money discussion from the point of view of the lifestyle. Once people buy into the goals, the house, the car, the vacation, whatever it is for them, then they will buy into what they need to achieve them.
So, okay, so in my generation, mm-hmm. 100 years ago, growing up, your parents said, you know, pay yourself first. I mean, this is nothing that we talk about is new, right?
Yeah.
So pay yourself first, save 10 cents of every dollar you make. Okay. Contribute to your retirement account. And if you have kids, go get some life insurance and don't forget to draft a will. And so they give you this messaging. And because we were obedient, we really were. I think back, I'm like, because, you know, if my parents told me to do it, then I did it. So what is it about this generation that they just won't do it? I mean, they need to have a goal. Is it because every single one of you got an award for participating, even if you were like the worst player on the team?
Oh, absolutely. That definitely comes into play. There's also a feeling of we got gypped. There's a feeling of we were built up to have the rug taken from underneath us. And I think even my own story is a little bit like that. I was built up. I had a great childhood. I went to a great school. The year I graduated college, the economy melts down.
Mm.
There's no job prospects, even if for my friends who had more practical, applicable degrees, struggled for years to find work. Many people accepted jobs that were well below what they probably should have just because they had to pay the student loans off.
And also you get that terrible statistic, which we always quote during recessions, that if you're unlucky enough to graduate in a recession, your lifetime earnings are lower than someone who's just dumb luck, right?
Right.
Graduate at the top, like in a good market, in a bad market. And so if you feel like the rug has been pulled out from you, how do we, let's just say that I'm a parent, which I'm not. I mean, I have two dogs, but they do whatever I say. So a treat does a lot. But maybe that's a good metaphor. Maybe it's there has to be a treat at the end.
It does.
And so how do you do that? Let's say you're coaching me and I want to say, like, well, my kid is not putting money into her retirement account.
Yeah.
What should I say?
So it's not framing the discussion in terms of the retirement account. It's framing the discussion in terms of what the Instagram account's going to look like once those bases are covered. And maybe you're not starting with the retirement account itself. Maybe you need to pair the retirement contribution with a short-term goal contribution. Mm. So that the idea of saving becomes a habit, and maybe it's for something that's a little bit closer and in the short term. But once the habit is established, you can now expand broadly to 10-year goals, to retirement. It's more about getting the right habits in place and then adjusting the mindset to really cover the financial basis rather than starting with the financial basis that need to be covered.
You know how it was said that their children of the Depression, of the Great Depression,
yeah,
acted in a very different way than the generation before them and a couple generations after. Do you feel like your generation, because as you said, you graduated in 2008, the year of the financial crisis,
mm-hmm,
the cusp, like right in the heat of a horrible recession?
No.
Do you feel like people of your generation are more careful about debt and are more hyper-focused about these? Because in a weird way, I would think the millennials would be the perfect generation for financial planning candidates because
right,
they saw the worst.
Yeah. So when it comes to things like investing or even using a credit card to build credit, millennials are very risk averse and it is hurting them in the long run because they're leaving the little money that they are saving, they're keeping in savings accounts, earning maybe 1% interest. They are not growing that money over the long term, and that means that they're going to be losing out big time when it comes to compound gains and long-term market gains. So there is definitely that to overcome with the millennial mentality, too, in that not only are we struggling to engage with our cash, but when we do, we are extremely conservative with it.
Hmm. You know, it's like funny. There is a double-edged sword of being a little too conservative. So when we come back with Stephanie O'Connell, the millennial money maven, let's talk about what your hope is going forward for this generation, how you think you can help with the building blocks, and again, what messaging older generations can have, and what do we need to learn from those millennials? Maybe there's something. Would you like to teach me something technically odd or something like that? Anyway, we just gave a shout out to public libraries and Parks and Rec. We're talking to Stephanie O'Connell, and you are listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. I know what
you're thinking. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. During the break, I gave myself quite a little paper cut here. I'm bleeding from my pinky. I give you my blood, my sweat. Oh, gosh. We're here with Stephanie O'Connell. She is the millennial money maven. During the break, we just talked about something that's interesting you brought up, and it really makes sense because before we went to the break, you said, you know, look, the millennials feel a little bit like, hey, we got ripped off a little bit, not ripped off, but like the rug was pulled out from under you. You try to do all the right things. You go to college. You know, you figure even if you have debt, you'll get a good job. You'll mm-hmm. pay it off. All those things usually happen. You graduate. Boom. You're in a recession. It's horrible. Horrible. But what you also said was that as a result of that, that many of these folks are very risk averse,
mm-hmm.
and they're saving money, if they have any money, not investing it. And then during the break, you said something that really kind of was very interesting. So talk about the large number of the millennials who are working in the gig economy.
Yeah, so about 30 to 40% of millennials are working gig to gig. And the implications of that aren't just unsteady income, but also no infrastructure for long-term financial benefits. So there's no HR packet you get on day mm-hmm. one that says, here's your 401k paperwork and let me walk you through it. Or even something as immediate as healthcare benefits. You know, I pay for my own healthcare benefits out of pocket. I'm 30 years old and I've never had access to an employer-sponsored 401k
plan. That's wild.
Right? So people don't think about that. And the huge percentage of the millennial population is now having to do all of these things that was done maybe for boomers in the infrastructure of their benefit package.
Mm-hmm.
alone. So not only are they contending with $30,000 of debt, they're also saying, okay, I have no idea where to begin filing the right paperwork to start a retirement account or going to the right website or whatever it is.
So when you think about that, do you think that we have to do a better job? Like, it should be, a lot of people are like, oh, we have to do more outreach. But I mean, if you, like you said, if you don't have someone in HR or even coworkers who are like, hey, I know you're young and stupid, but do this, which is really how most people ended up contributing. What is it that we tell, what should people be doing? So should we say, get your head on your shoulders, go to Vanguard, open up an IRA account? Like, what do you tell people?
So, yes, I mean, those are the steps everybody has to take. But again, getting them to take the step is the big question. How do we do it? And so I think it can't start from the point of go to Vanguard. It has to start from the point of, what do you want your life to look like, you know? Mm-hmm. And do you want to be this in the same position you are today, fearful, afraid, struggling, that you're in 40 years? You know, and that's what's at stake. I think with millennials, it's always what's at stake if you don't take this action. Rather than do this, it's like, okay, you don't want to save. I get it. But do you want to take a trip around the world? Oh, yeah. Well, are you willing to give that up? Because if you're not, then you need to take this action.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really so. Also, your psychology degree did come in
this
handy.
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying the psychology has definitely come in handy. And I've actually thought about going back to study behavioral economics just because, like we were talking about before, the information is out there and it always has been. What's key for this generation and honestly for everyone, because to be real honest, not any generation's too great at money these days. So it's about getting people to engage with the information in a meaningful way and framing it in such a way that they take action.
What is the truest thing about the millennial generation, and what is the misperception from, let's just say, the boomer Gen X? Like, so what's the truest thing? Like, you know, when they say, like, you know, I got to admit that this is the real thing. But what's the thing that we're missing?
The truest thing is definitely being purpose-driven, and I know that's a positive thing, but millennials are purpose-driven, and sometimes people like to put that down and say, oh, well, you know, you're not always going to be saving the world. But that's not necessarily a bad mentality to have, and it's not necessarily saving the world either. It's just feeling that at the end of the day, you're making a contribution in your life on a day-to-day basis that goes beyond you. And I think that's something we should admire and not put down about millennials.
Okay, but what's the knock on the generation that's true?
The knock on the generation. I would say the tech addiction, the thumbs on the cell phone, head down, right into the screen at all times. Absolutely. You know, I do it myself, and I'm trying to be very conscious of it, but I cannot go to lunch without not putting my phone on the table with me, because there's that sense of, oh my gosh, what if I miss something huge?
But you know, here's a good little reminder. You're not going to miss anything huge. Even if you do, you'll hear about it. This is also how I have, like, I try to do this myself. Look, I feel the same way. Can we keep Stephanie for segment five? Okay. So I feel the same way, which is it's hard to disconnect. And because I'm part of a news organization,
yes,
I can't.
Yes.
But on the other hand, when the market's closed and it's like, even if something big happens, like, all right, it'll be a half hour. I do find it incredibly draining to try to stay on top of this all. We're talking to Stephanie O'Connell. She is the millennial money maven, the author of The Broke and Beautiful Life. And uncharacteristically, you get to stay for the last segment of the hour, segment five, which is our short segment. So think of something fabulous and important to say to leave everybody with, like, wanting more Stephanie. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Stephanie at Stephanie O'Connell, O-C-O-N-N-E-L, 1L, at Stephanie with an F, at Stephanie O'Connell. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. And we're coming to the end of the program. We don't usually do this. The guest does not usually stick around for the last segment of the show. But Stephanie O'Connell is so good that I wanted her to come back for the last segment. She is the Millennial Money Maven, the author of The Broke and Beautiful Life. We'll link to that so you can buy that book for your millennial kids, or you yourself can buy it. Okay, so before we wrap up, what is it that millennials need to know about that's so important about their financial lives before, you know, let's just say even as they start, before they even start investing? But what is most important?
There was undoubtedly a bad hand. There was a recession. There is student loan debt. There is a bad job market. At the end of the day, though, you are the greatest driver of your own financial life. And one of the things that really transformed my financial life from just scraping by in New York City and couch surfing was really rethinking the way I was earning money. Because savings is limited. You can only save so much money. Eventually, you get to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Earning potential is unlimited. There is no cap. And all I hear all the time from people when I say that are excuses as to why their situation is different. Their degree, their employer, their experience. And the fact is, I am sitting here with my drama degree, and I have a six-figure business because I have been bullish about my earnings, and I am negotiating, and I am improving my skill set, finding out new information, bringing it to markets with demand, huge one right there, and really being aggressive about earning money just as I have been about saving money.
I love that. So this is what economists call human capital. And if you need a little bit of a launch pad, I'm going to plug the government for 1 second. Opportunity.census.gov. It's called the Opportunity Project. The White House launched it last year. This is a cool site. It provides information about critical resources, job trends of the 21st century workforce, skills required for every job in America. Check it out, opportunity.census.gov. Check out Stephanie O'Connell at her website, which is
StephanieO'Connell.com.
And she is the Millennial Money Maven. Go to our show notes. We'll link to everything, Stephanie. It's Jill on Money. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Give us a holler if you have a question. 855-411-JILL. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. See you on the radio next week.